Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
You know, the possibility of KKFN, KKFN, HD1, Longmont, Denver. The possibility of putting the defensive responsibility and calling the defensive plays to Ed Donatell and Vic just be the head coach after he mismanaged the end of that Titans game. And that never happened. So Vic's still calling the plays, but he's on the sideline, not in the booth. But he thinks there's a huge advantage to a play caller in the booth, which, you know, I can agree with. Anytime you're up top, if you've ever been to a game and, you know, you're sitting up there a little bit, you got a great view of everything that's going on. And what teams are trying to do, what the personnel is, and all those types of things. And you, like you said, you can get your play sheets all spread out on the you know, work area, and so it's a lot more comfortable up there for a play caller.
And yeah, does anybody? I don't know if I know anybody in this world that loves anything as much as Vic Fangio loves coaching from the booth. He talks about it. I mean, he talks about it just so he's like, you're relaxed. You get to hang out there. That dude, he loves being up there. But you're right. My seats, when I go to the Broncos game, are in the south stands, and I can see everything. And I have sat close. This is a weird analogy because I'm a fan. I prefer to sit a little further back.
Yeah.
Because I do get to see everything. It is better.
You're right. You get down there, and I've been in the stands to Broncos games, and I went to the Colts game, playoff game, which was a disaster in 2000. What was that? Was that 14?
Oh, that was horrible.
That was so bad. I was depressed leaving that game. So me and my son went, and I was sitting in the stands, and I don't know, I was like 8, 9, 10 rows up, something like that, behind the Broncos bench, and it's just not very enjoyable. And now you get the action and stuff, but you can't see everything. It's hard to see. Now you go up a little bit, and now you can see everything and how it unfolds. And I ran into you one game just out of the blue. Remember that?
Yes. Yeah, preseason. You were getting fries for your kid.
Right. Yeah, I was looking for French fries all over the place. I mean, hey, five-tool dad, that's what I do, you know. You want French fries? All right, I'll go find you stinking French fries.
Yeah, that was the game where we talked a minute, and then you went back to your seats, and then this kid comes up to me and he goes, can I get your autograph? And I was like, that can't be right. Why do you want my autograph? He goes, my dad said you played for the Broncos. And I look over at his dad, and his dad's yelling, the other guy. So, and Orlando told me I should have just signed the autograph.
You should have just signed it. John Davis.
Yeah, just
put your high school number on there.
I didn't even get to play then.
That's okay. Just put a number.
High school GPA.
Double zero. There we go. High school GPA. Perfect.
So, Stoke, we had kind of some good news for some guys you know pretty well. Vic Fangio spoke earlier today about Peyton Manning and John Lynch making the final cut for the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I was pretty, you know, I figured out Peyton was going to be pretty special when he was about 14 or 15 years old, and he would come over to the Saints facility and throw Pascal with us some days, you know, with our team in the offseason. So he's long time been destined to achieve the greatness that he did achieve. Sam Mills deserves to be in there. I'm just telling you, I know everybody thinks I'm biased, and I am probably, but I will tell you for a fact that there's been guys in this league that have been around both Sam and other players that are in the Hall of Fame, and they would tell you that Sam was better than those, some of those guys that are in the Hall of Fame as an inside linebacker. And he definitely deserves it. I think Pat Willis deserves it. He was a tremendous inside linebacker for a good 9-10 years in San Francisco, fastest inside linebacker I've ever coached. And he was a great player, too. And John will eventually get in, I'm sure, John Lynch.
Yeah, look, I mean, Sam Mills was a part of a great group down there with the Saints for a long time, and he was a really good football player. Obviously, Vic coached him. Patrick Willis for the 49ers out of Ole Miss, just a wrecking ball, sideline to sideline type of linebacker. So it'll be interesting to see on those guys. Obviously, Peyton's going to get in. And Lynch, hopefully it's Lynch's time. You know, he's just such a great teammate, such a great football player, hard-nosed, old-school type of player. And hopefully it's his time this year. It'll be really cool to see him go in with Peyton.
And Atwater.
Right,
because they'll be carrying it all over. So
that's right. So hopefully that's the case this year. We'll see how it unfolds. But certainly Peyton will be getting in, and we know that Steve's in and will be enshrined also this upcoming year, which is really, really cool, and it's great for the Broncos, and gonna be a fun year, a unique year to watch the Hall of Fame and see all these greats go into it.
Yeah, and Stoke, earlier today we talked about all these coaches you played for. All but one coach you played for coached into a Super Bowl. You played with Peyton. Are we starting to see kind of a trend here with recent success in the NFL being associated to you?
I try to be humble here and not bring that up, but since you did bring it up, I think you're absolutely right. You know, if you're around Stokely, you end up being great, and greatness will happen for you. So that's what we're seeing. So thanks for bringing that up, John.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Of course. I mean, it's just, look, the facts are the facts.
Hey, greatness is about to happen to you now, John. So
yeah.
Just so you know, you know, greatness will be happening. I don't know if it's Hall of Fame, but something wonderful will be happening to you here shortly.
I'm going
to
go buy lotto tickets.
There you go. Get yourself a lottery ticket. That's what you need to do.
I'll split, but I'm not sharing it with you, though, because you, I can't. Okay. Yes, I will. I'll share the greatness.
Just break me off a little bit. Just a little bit.
Of course. And so it's kind of funny in there. He talked middle linebackers, Vic, you know, Sam Mills, Patrick Willis. Looking at the Broncos this year, I think going into the year, the middle linebacker was, in a lot of people's eyes, looked at as a weakness of the team. And thus far, it really hasn't been.
That's a great point.
I think they played well.
Yeah. Look, Alexander Johnson had a great year last year. Obviously, he was a top 50 player in the league, Pro Football Focus or one of these things. And he just came on the scene and he had a great year. Now, could he back it up as the, you know, guy that's, hey, you're the guy now. It's not a great story anymore. We're expecting you to play at this level. Can you deliver again? And I think he has. Maybe not to the degree that he came onto the scene last year, because it wasn't just the tackles last year. I mean, he was interceptions, it seems like, calls, fumbles, big hits. We haven't quite seen it to that degree, but he's just been a solid football player. And then Josie Jewell, who I think a lot of people were down on. I was down on. I didn't hold out hope that he was going to be inserted in the starting lineup and be a really good football player for the Broncos, and that's what he's been. So it's been a pleasant surprise to watch Josie Jewell, a guy that had his chance last year and lost his job to Alexander Johnson and never saw the field again after 3, 4, 5 games. And then all of a sudden this year he gets another opportunity, he's taking advantage of it, and he's been a tackling machine. So both those guys have done a really nice job in the middle, and they stayed healthy, right? I mean, that's huge.
Yeah.
That's huge. We didn't have a lot of depth there. We released Todd Davis before the season. There's not a lot of depth there. We've seen injuries all over the place. We've been fortunate that our two inside linebackers, you know, our defensive front's been just demolished with injuries. When you talk about outside linebackers, Vaughn, you look at the whole defensive line, Shelby and Jarrell Casey and Mike Purcell and, you know, Draymond Jones missed time, DeMarcus Walker missed time. I mean, they've been just banged up. But our inside linebackers and our two safeties have been really, really healthy, which has been nice, because if those two groups weren't healthy, it could have been really, really, it could have been a disaster for that defense.
It definitely has. And that's just what I like about the middle linebackers is, for one, you could tell how well they played because we're not talking about letting Todd Davis go. That's just hasn't been brought up.
That's right.
It's like a bad decision. And so they
won. It's been a great decision.
Yeah, it was.
They saved a lot of money. And I think everybody loved Todd Davis. He was a good football player, but we haven't missed a beat there, and he saved a lot of money.
Yeah, so Vic's just done getting that middle linebacker spot. It's important to him. I just really like how he's gotten those guys play. And earlier today, Vic also spoke about going up against this Saints offense.
They ran their normal offense. I was, you know, turned on the tape looking to see maybe something different, but it's the Saints offense they've been running ever since Sean's been there, and they've evolved to. With the addition of his ability to have the quarterback designed runs. So, but other than the quarterback designed runs, which are unique to him, they ran their offense.
They did. And, you know, you talk about the quarterback designed runs, and you started seeing them late in the football game when they were trying to run the clock out. And that's point of emphasis number one for the Broncos. When you get in third and one, third and two in the goal line situations, I mean, look for Taysom Hill to just go over that right side between the guard and tackle, and they pull the opposite guard pull the opposite tackle, and it's just a power play that is so tough to stop. And the Falcons had no answer for it. And I'm expecting to see more of that. I'm expecting to see possibly a fake off of that in a pass. But it's a difficult play to stop when you got a running back. I mean, a quarterback as physical as Taysom Hill, who plays like a running back in that wildcat set. So when you get in those situations, expect that to happen. But it's one thing to expect it. It's another thing to go out there and stop it. It's a difficult play to stop.
It really is. And that I'm a big, so you played, so you know, I'm a big believer in like game film. I've looked at it. Guys like Trevor Siemian, Brock Osweiler, the Tim Tebow offense, once they switched, all of those were good for six games. And then once there was six full games of film, they were never good again. They were completely figured out. So I'm wondering with Taysom Hill, we're still kind of caught up in that whole, there's not a lot of game film on this guy yet and what they're doing with him. So right. They can still throw a lot of wrinkles in there because his tendencies, his weaknesses, they're not fully known. And I think that's what makes it so difficult to defend them this weekend.
Yeah, look, you don't have a lot of film on him. But obviously, like Vic said, they didn't all of a sudden scrap their offense that they were running with Drew Brees. Now, you look at Taysom Hill, you look at his strengths, his weaknesses, and, you know, he can throw the underneath stuff pretty good. He was on target, on the money, with 20 yards or in passes. The deep stuff, he struggles with. He struggles with the deep ball. Now, they threw a few of them, but it's, you know, it looks like me in high school when I tried to play center field. I mean, the crow hop and, you know, like 5 yards running before you're able to throw the ball, right? That's what Taysom Hill does. He, like, crow hops into the thing three times before he throws a deep ball. So it's a little bit odd, a little bit different. One of them looked like a punt. So I think for the Broncos, it's a loading up, putting pressure, make them try to throw the ball deep, take away the underneath stuff. I think if you're watching the film, that's the best recipe. Now, they got guys that can go get it, obviously, and Michael Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders and Jared Cook in the wide receiver position. But I think you got to be aggressive against this guy, even though you don't have a lot of film on him. Try to make him beat you throwing the football down the field, deep passes.
And that's kind of the whole thing. Going into this, we beat Justin Herbert, although Herbert had a good game, I think, against the Broncos overall. Tua had probably the worst day of football he's ever played in his life up to this point.
Tough day for Tua.
Yeah, it was tough, but he seemed to have handled it pretty well, like post-game and everything. With Taysom Hill going into this, how you felt about going against Herbert, Tua, Taysom Hill, does he worry you less or more than the other two guys?
For me, he worries me a little bit more because he's not a true rookie, and he's got weapons all around him, and they got a really good defense, and they're a good football team. They're a well-coached football team, and the things that he can do when the play breaks down, right? It's not just like, oh, okay, you know, we got everybody covered. Nope. Now you got to earn your money. When it's 4, 5, 6 seconds, because once he starts to move, he's tough to deal with, and he's fast, he's explosive, and he's a load to tackle. And there was a play against the Falcons. They were at, 15, 18 yard line, and they got everybody covered up. He scrambles to the left, and it looks like they got him. He gets the corner, and next thing you know, he's in the end zone for a touchdown. So it's not only just covering these weapons that they have, but it's also accounting for his legs, which is an issue when you're the defensive coordinator, is accounting for a quarterback's legs. And it's a hard thing to do. So he worries me a lot because of the dynamic of not only what he can do in the passing game and the weapons around him, and Michael Thomas, Emmanuel, and those great weapons, Kamara, you know, Jared Cook, but also when things break down. And then just on top of that, just the design runs, you know, and having him in the shotgun, and next thing you know, it's just a power play off tackle. And it's a tough play to stop. So the things that they can do with them, it makes it tough to game plan for a guy like that. Because, you know, he can throw the football, and he is accurate. I was surprised by how accurate he was, but that was the underneath stuff. So he can throw it, and he did do a good job of it, and I'm expecting to build off of that. And obviously it's different circumstances. They played in a dome last week. It's not going to be a dome this week, and they're going to be on the road. So different challenges for Taysom this week than what he had last week.
Yeah, and a lot better defense than what he went against
absolutely.
Last week, too.
You're absolutely right. The Broncos defense is much better than the Falcons.
And with Taysom, the one thing I do think about, because everybody says it's like going against a rookie quarterback, but he's very familiar with his Saints teammates. He's been there for 4 years. This isn't like Tua and Herbert, where this is their first year with these guys. Taysom Hill's been around this team. He knows this offense inside and out, and he knows these players' tendencies. So when people say it's like going against a rookie quarterback, it's really not, because his familiarity with these guys is much, much better than what we'll see with a regular rookie quarterback.
Yeah, and look, I mean, he hasn't thrown a lot of passes. You know, he threw 20. That's the playoffs and regular season. 20 total attempts heading into last week. But he's been there, and he's been around the system. And like you said, he knows the guy, so he hasn't thrown the ball a lot. He is an inexperienced quarterback, but he has those other things that young quarterbacks don't have. And just knowing the offense and being in those quarterback meetings and being around Drew Brees and how they handle, how they operate, what the reads are, the progressions, he's done all of that. So he didn't miss out on a whole lot of off-season football like these other young quarterbacks did. He knows the offense. It's the same system, and he's been in it now going on 4 years, and so he knows his teammates, knows what they like. So that's a big benefit, and that's a good point, John.
So, Stoke, were you ever the emergency quarterback? Did you ever have to run into that situation?
Look, I mean, I can't throw the – look, I played quarterback growing up, seventh, eighth grade, freshman year, ran the option, right? I couldn't throw the ball 10 yards. I hurt my shoulder my rookie year, had surgery. I got no range of motion. I can throw the ball underhand pretty good. I can wing it like a softball pitcher. I do good at that, but I can't throw the ball overhand at all. So, no, I'd have been like the last person that you would want playing quarterback in an emergency role. Last person.
It would have been a real emergency.
That's right.
We
are out of guys, just run the ball every time. And I wasn't going to run it, and I would have just – if I had to throw it, I could have – you know, I could keep her on the run to the right, underhand, softball style. I can get the job done that way. I don't know if anybody's ever thrown a touchdown that way.
Yeah.
Underhand softball pitcher style.
Probably Jake Plummer tried it, I think, and it got intercepted. But it was and we're waiting to hear from Drew Lock here out there with the Broncos. With Taysom Hill, too, some wise guy on Twitter – I saw tried to call out Stoke for thinking it was a bad idea to start Taysom last week. Stoke, you weren't alone. Most people thought that was a bad idea, I think, to start Taysom Hill last week. And we all just – I thought I would have gone with Jameis. I mean, going into that game, I would have 100% gone with Jameis Winston. And it's why Sean Payton is who he is, because it did work out.
It did. And it's only one game. Now, we'll see what he looks like against the Broncos, right? You said it. Broncos defense is a lot better than the Falcons defense. So I'm not ready to crown Taysom Hill as the next coming at the quarterback position but obviously in that game, it was the right move by Sean Payton. And I still would have, like you said, I still would have thought and I would have preferred Jameis Winston as the starter. I think he's a better long-term prospect there. But you also still have Taysom Hill playing his role, where he can come in for a series if you want, or he can come in for a few plays and do some different things there like he's been doing. And I think that would have been the best bet for the Saints. But they went with Taysom Hill full-time, and he delivered. Now we'll see what he looks like this week. Obviously a different test here against the Broncos defense, which is much better and much more prepared for, I think, for a guy like that than the Atlanta Falcons defense, which, they can't get after the quarterback. They have trouble generating pressure, and they're not very good against the run. So that's a bad combination against anybody. So the Broncos got a better team, and I think they'll present more of a challenge to Taysom Hill and that Saints offense than what we saw with the Falcons.
Yeah, and I brought it up to Mike Triplett earlier, and I think it'd be a pretty good trophy to hang on the wall if the Broncos back-to-back weeks could get after a quarterback so bad that they have to bench him.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I didn't think they would bench Tua. That was a bad move by Brian Flores. I thought he's done a good job there. But now you got a young quarterback that every time he struggles, he's going to be looking over his shoulder. You know, am I getting pulled here? I think that was the wrong message to send. And I don't think Sean Payton's going to send that message to Taysom Hill. But at the same time, if he throws a couple picks, let's go to Drew Lock at the podium.
Broncos.com yesterday, and I have a two-part. He praised your resilience, your ability to come back. You know, this year has been a little rocky. What does that mean to hear him say that? He specifically said you've been resilient, likes the way you've been able to come back. and battled through some of this early adversity?
Yeah, it means a lot, you know, to hear from a guy like that and hear from technically your boss. But, you know, I want to have him, you know, be able to answer questions about how good we were in the first half and how good we were all game, instead of those resilient answers, push you through the tough stuff at the end. You know, it's time for us to go out and play well for four quarters and, you know, get this thing rolling.
And last thing, follow up on that. I know you had said, I think it was the Chiefs week, you have a relationship with John. You're able to talk to him after games. How has that been since he's had COVID? I know he's back now. Were you able to continue talking with him during this time, or what, or did you have to put that on pause until he was able to come back?
Yeah, the talking in person was definitely on pause. A couple texts, a couple phone calls here and there. But, you know, right as he was able to come back in the building, we got to talk and catch up on, you know, the weeks that, that he was out.
Next one, Jeff Lynn.
Drew, I'm just curious, after looking at some of the snaps and everything, you're more efficient this year under center, and I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, we practiced a lot. That's one of the things that we, you know, we focus on during the week, and quite honestly, it's one of those things where you've, you know, you've been in the gun your whole life. You can draw back from the gun. It's necessarily, you know, you got to work on things you haven't done a lot in your life. So some of the throws that I'm making in these games are the first time I've completed these throws, because it's all under center. You know, I didn't do any of that in college. It's the first time really getting some of the looks of plays from under center. It's stuff that I need to keep getting better at and keep practicing and keep getting familiar with. The footwork and stuff from under center has been good. It's, I feel like I picked it up faster than I expected. It's just really being able to see everything from underneath there. It's just a whole different, like, look at the game compared to being in the gun.
Next one.
Hey, Drew, the Saints defense rolling into this game, a lot of great statistics. What do they do to contain the run game and also get eight sacks?
Yeah, those guys up front just play really, really hard. You know, it's different when you got guys that are extremely talented and can get away with talent. But when you have a team that has the guys that are extremely talented and bust their butt day in and day out, and you can see how hard they're working on film and games, that's what the Saints defense is. You know, you go down the lineup, you can name every single one of their players, and they all play like it's their first year in the league, flying around, hitting, you know, making the big plays, and just looking pretty fresh out there on their plan. They're flying around.
Next one, Mike.
Yeah, Drew, I'm not sure you were able to appreciate it when you were handing it off and carrying out your fake, but watching the film, what was your thoughts on watching Reisner and Bowles pull and truck there out by the right side?
Oh, yeah. That was, you know, I try to sneak a few peeks in here and there without getting yelled at too much from Coach Shula for not carrying out my fakes, but those guys were fun to watch on the film, man. Play after play, those guys are giving it their all. They're in such good condition right now and really hitting a stride. This will be a big test for all of us, you know, including them up front, to see where we're at. You know, see if we can come and pound the ball again, and, you know, if we can block really well in the pass game. It'll be a testament to them for bringing, you know, hopefully bringing back-to-back games like they just did, and, you know, keep them rolling.
Next one in to me.
Drew, this year at Thanksgiving, simply put, what are you thankful for?
Wow. Well, for one, I've always been thankful for my family and my friends. Got me through a lot. Wouldn't be here without them. That's the cliche, but, you know, they really do mean the world to me. I think one thing I'm really thankful for right now is, you know, a lot of people don't get to go to their job every day. A lot of people are unemployed. A lot of people's places are shut down. Some of them aren't even, you know, full capacity like my dad's. And quite honestly, we get to come out here today, and sure, we, you know, complain about having the visor cover on our mouth in practice, but we get to come out and do what we love every single day and play the game of football during a time like this in life. I'd safe to say it's something to be thankful for.
It's a great answer there from Drew Locke. And we will be back with 1043thefan.com's James Merrillat next. John Davis sitting in for Zach Bye today with my man Stoke, and we are now joined by 1043thefan.com's James Merrillat. James, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, fellas.
So, James, what Colorado sports, Denver sports, what are you most thankful for right now?
Oh, boy, that is a
perfect person to ask.
Tough question. You know what? Here's something that I am really pleasantly surprised by, and it hasn't gotten a ton of attention because it's been such a weird season. But the first two games of the Carl Durrell era up in Boulder, not only did they win both the games, but a very entertaining team to watch. They put a lot of points on the board. They play hard, play a physical brand of football. So I'm a long-suffering CU fan. So I'm gonna point to the Buffs as the thing I am most thankful for. The pro teams in town, man, I got a few bones to pick with all of them. So I guess it's a little ugly at the moment.
I love it. I love it. James Merrillat, joining us here. James, the running game finally got going. Melvin Gordon, Phillip Lindsay. I mean, this is what it was supposed to look like from the beginning. But Melvin fumbles it there at the end at the 1 yard line. What'd you make of Melvin Gordon and the fumble, and what are your thoughts about him moving forward?
You know, I was not as down on the Melvin Gordon signing as most people, because I did think they needed to upgrade that position. Stoke, we've had a long-standing conversation on this show going back to Zach and I's bet about Phillip Lindsay. So
yep.
I thought an upgrade was needed. I just thought they had bigger priorities this past offseason than running back. Melvin Gordon has been a colossal disappointment, but I thought he was pretty good against the Dolphins. That was the guy I wanted to see. Obviously, the fumble was bad, but it was a great run until he fumbled. I mean, until the very end, it was really a great run, and he was running people over and breaking tackles and, diving for the goal line. So it was a great effort. I'm going to give him a little bit of a pass on the fumble because it was a great effort.
But you're, man, giving out passes on a fumble? Holy cow. Are you sick? Seriously, are you all right?
But Stoke, he had two or three or four blitz pickups that game that were just stellar, that Phillip Lindsay would have got run over and pushed back into Drew Lock. So I thought it was his best game, even though he had the fumble. So you know me, Stoke. I focus on the positive. And he was so good in that game, other than the fumble. I'm gonna call it a win for Melvin Gordon.
Wow. So see, I look at it a little bit. I think the fumble takes away all the good because of the context of it. There was no need to worry about scoring a touchdown there. You know, for me, it's more about, hey, just hold on to the stinking football. If we got to kick a field goal, we got to kick a field goal. You hold that thing with two hands. That's priority number one, two, three, four, and five. Scoring a touchdown is way down the list. Just hold on the football. And at the worst case scenario, we kick a field goal. We're up two scores. Game's over. The last thing we can do is fumble it. And that's what he did. That, to me, takes away all the positives that he had going for him that game.
Yeah, no, I get it. It fumble's bad anytime. At that moment, it was even worse, given all the circumstances you just outlined. I do tend to be, though, a guy that just is, hey, score when you can, right? Like, I know Todd Gurley had the play earlier this year where he tried to go down to one, and the Falcons wound up scoring. He wound up going to the end zone. They scored too soon, and the Lions came back and beat him. I get it. But, man, I was watching the college game last week where the guy went down at the one instead of scoring the touchdown. And they're just taking a knee, trying to run out the clock. And the fourth down snap, because all these teams are in shotgun all the time, sails over the quarterback's head, and the quarterback picks it up, and he almost scores. Like, score when you can. I think you're playing with you're messing with the football gods in that point. So I'm never going to be angry.
Well, I didn't say that. James, I didn't say that. I didn't say don't score. I mean, come on. What are you throwing? I didn't say that. I said, hey, look, if you can score, yeah, score a touchdown, but that's not priority number one or two. It's holding on to the stinking football. Now, if you got a chance to score, you score, but you don't need to be fighting and sticking the ball out there and doing all those things to score a touchdown like it's the last play of the game and you're losing. You got to take care of the football.
I get it. And I guess, look,
come on.
If you fumble the ball, you, by definition, were careless with it. But there are degrees of that, right? And I didn't think he was being ridiculously careless with the ball, had it out, one hand and doing stuff he shouldn't have been doing or diving for the pylon. And it fumbles out of the end zone for a touchback or whatever. There's any number of dumb things he could have done. He was running hard. The defense made a good play. Sometimes that happens.
Okay, so we're all in agreement that scoring is good.
Yes, scoring is good. Yes.
We all agree that touchdowns are good. James, Vic Fangio, did last week's win do anything to change your opinion of his long-term prospects in Denver as the head coach?
No, it didn't. It was the best all-around game they've had all year. I mean, the 20-13 final score did not indicate how much they dominated. Double the yardage of the Dolphins, really could have easily had 30-35 points. You know, the fumble we've been talking about, the fourth and one down in the red zone, the second one at the 9 and had to settle for a field goal. So really, I thought they were pretty good offensively. Defense just smothered Tua, but that's an offense. We actually all should have seen this coming. And I heard this stat on the station leading up to the game that I think in their three wins with Tua, they had been outgained by like 500 and some total yards. So we kind of maybe should have seen it coming. But it was a good all-around performance. I'm not taking that away. But he still did some things even in that game that drove me crazy. For instance, going for it on fourth down. If you're a conservative coach and you want to play conservative football and you want to win games, 17-14 like he seems to want to, then be conservative all the time. And the conservative call there is kick the field goal. Go up 16-10.
But that's not who he is, James. He's not a conservative coach. We've seen him be aggressive. We've seen him be aggressive at the end of the football game to beat the Chargers last year. He didn't take a knee. We saw him go for two against the Chiefs, try a fake punt. Now, it doesn't always work, but I don't think Vic is overly aggressive or overly conservative. I think he just kind of goes, like he was talking about, I think it was last year, with his gut, how he feels at the time. But I don't think he's overall a conservative coach. I wouldn't frame him that way.
I think he totally goes with his gut. And I think he, kind of goes with the wind. And that's a criticism from my standpoint.
Okay.
Because I think you got to be more consistent. I think you get yourself in trouble doing that. I think you either got to be a riverboat gambler and always be a riverboat gambler, or you got to be conservative and always be conservative. I think that's a better formula. I think when you watch this team, they seem to be a team that they don't know what they are. They don't have a personality. And part of that is because their coach is all over the place. He's not consistent. Like you develop a personality as a team by going out and consistently over and over and over and over again, doing the same things, operating the same way, attacking things the same way. That's why they're, civil, because they got, eight different personalities and we never know what we're going to get on any given Sunday.
Well, James Marilat joined us. James, what do you make of Drew Lock and his performance, obviously, last week? And where are you at about his future prospects for being the quarterback of the Denver Broncos?
Yeah, I thought he was really good on Sunday. I know the stats got kind of padded at the end with the Tim Patrick throw, but I thought he was really good. I thought he showed a lot of toughness physically, just being out there and playing through it, which you have to be able to do in this league. And I thought he showed a lot of toughness mentally, because after a four-interception game, you come out on the third play, offensive play of the game, you throw another pick. I mean, that's an easy place for a young quarterback to unravel, and he didn't. It didn't snowball at all. I thought he played really well, and he had a couple of third and long conversions throwing the ball. On the first scoring drive, he had one. He had the third and 13 that he converted running the ball. That was on their first scoring drive. Those are the kind of plays that guys who can be, legit big-time starters in the NFL can make, right? Third and 13 when you've got, Trevor Siemian and Case Keenum and journeyman-type quarterbacks, man, Sam Martin might as well start stretching because he's coming out and punting. So the fact that he did that, three or four times the other day, I thought was great. I'm more concerned with more than the final score, more than the final stats. I want to see some wow moments where I think, hey, there's somebody who can do something that not a lot of people on this planet can do, and we need to see less and less bang your head against the table kind of moments. His interception was one of those, but I thought he had four or five moments in that game that was really good. The KJ Hamler miss on the deep ball, though, guys, you got to make that throw. That's as wide open as you can get in the NFL. It's a perfect play call, perfect route. It's there. He had time. He's got to get the deep ball accuracy issues fixed, because that's a big play. That's a touchdown. You got to make that throw. That's just an unforgivable miss, in my opinion.
It's James Marilat, 104.3 TheFan.com. James, happy Thanksgiving. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, you bet, guys.
Always happy Thanksgiving,
happy
buddy.
Thanksgiving to you, too.
All right. Good stuff.
Yeah, great stuff, as always. James. I wish he wasn't so shy.
Yeah, you know? We got to get him to open up a little bit more. He's just always just so reserved that we just got to figure out a way to get him going a little bit more.
Good stuff. He actually he said something that I agree with, though. And James and I'm with James on a lot of things, to be honest, which I don't know what that says about me. But I do think I wish Vic was more consistent. I don't like the going with the gut thing. I think the players, and you would know this better than me, but with Vance, that's what kind of did him in at the end of his tenure is players, I think, for me, should know, you know, if it's coming up to fourth one, we know we're going for it, or we know we're kicking the field goal. Kind of the up and down, I'd imagine, might create stress and uncertainty with the players when they're out there.
No, I mean, for me, I think, you look, whatever coach calls, let's go with it. You know, I mean, sometimes you go for it, sometimes you don't. It just depends on the situation and how things are going. And I don't think you can just be one style of a coach and, you know, that's who I am and be successful. I think you have to be able to adjust and be flexible with in-game situations. There's not always a fourth and one every time that I'm going to go for it at the 25-yard line.
That's true.
Right? Or fourth and two. I mean, sometimes I might go for it on fourth and two, fourth and three at midfield. Most of the times I'm not. So I think there's times and places to be aggressive, but there's also times and places to be conservative. I don't think you ought to be stuck in your ways and just be one style of a football coach. And that's just who I am. I'm Riverboat Ron. I'm going to go for it every sinking fourth down, fourth and one. I mean, Ron Rivera doesn't do that. I mean, nobody does that. You got to be able to be flexible and, you know when to go for it and be aggressive. And sometimes you got to be conservative. And so I like that approach. I like being a coach that, you know what, I'm not just always aggressive. I don't want to be foolish and throw caution in the wind and be aggressive that way, but also don't want to be ultra conservative. I like the call to go for it. It didn't work out last week, but I think there's times and places to be aggressive early in football games, and there's times and places to be conservative, but don't pigeonhole yourself into being a certain type of football coach. I think that's the wrong philosophy.
I hope Vic Fangio heard that. That was very inspiring for somebody like him.
Hopefully he was. I think he's a big listener of the show.
He's
got a lot of time on his hands during this time. I'm sure he's riding around in his car listening. Maybe in his office breaking down some Taysom Hill film, just listening to us, and maybe listen to my breakdown of Taysom and what he should do against Taysom. And so I'm sure he's up in his office doing that right now.
He's doing it.
Yeah, you're around Stokely, you end up being great. There you go. There you go, Vic.
We're going to give our keys to the game now.
Oh,
our keys to the game are presented by Geeman Criminal Defense. GoAwayDUI.com. Remember, the key to your best defense is choosing the right lawyer. Stoke, your keys to the game.
Well, I think my key to the game is continuing to run the football for this Broncos offense. It was great last week. It looked good. I mean, both of these guys in the 80s in rushing yards, over five a carry, Phillip and Melvin. They did a lot of great things on the ground. When you can take pressure off your young quarterback and that guy can turn around and just hand the ball off and just watch and you gain yards, you get first downs, you score touchdowns, that's what it's all about. Now, he doesn't feel like he's got to make every single throw, every play. You're not sitting there every time it's third and eight, third and ten. You're staying in front of the sticks. You're making everything more manageable. So for the Broncos, have the running game continue to be successful, continue to stick with it, and if they can do that, to me, that's the biggest key for the Denver Broncos. What do you say?
I say it's getting after the quarterback, Taysom Hill. I know he can kind of get outside the pocket and make some stuff happen with his legs, but really, we've seen it over and over again. You can take the greatest quarterback and you beat him up, and you can just get them dejected, and you can get them frustrated in a game, to where they really start to play bad. They really start to see ghosts. I think we saw it last week with Tua, and I think we could see it again this week. But the Broncos, they got to stay on him, and they've got to pressure him. They can't give him time to think, because for one, then he can move out, or he can get the ball to Alvin Kamara, Emmanuel Sanders, Michael Thomas. They have so many weapons on this offense. This Broncos defense, they've got to frustrate him. I want Taysom Hill coming off the field looking at the coaches going, that 55 is in my face every single time I drop back. Get him away from me. He's got to be that type of frustrated. If Taysom Hill's got time to make plays, if these guys have time to get the ball in space, it's going to be a long day for this Broncos defense. So Vic Fangio, he's got to dial it up. He's got to play aggressive. We know he can be sometimes not blitz. This is not the week to do it, Stoke. I think the Broncos got to pressure all day. Even if he gets out there a little bit, keep it coming, get in his face, show him stuff he's never seen. I think that's a key to the win.
I love it. I think that's a great point, and I agree with you 100%. You can't be conservative in this game. They got too many weapons. And Taysom Hill did some good things last week when he had time. So you got to give him different pressure looks. You got to try to put pressure on him, confuse him, hit him, make him get rid of the football before he wants to. If you give him time, you got Emmanuel, Michael Thomas, Jared Cook, Kamara. They'll beat you. They'll beat you. This defense isn't that good to be able to stop those weapons. So the way to get after the Saints offense is by pressuring Taysom Hill and dialing up pressures and making him uncomfortable and hitting him and getting rid of the football quicker than he wants to. And if you do that, you'll have a chance to pick off a couple balls. And hopefully that's what Vic's got dialed up for this week. I can't wait to watch it. It's going to be interesting to see if they can slow down all these weapons of the Saints offense. But I agree with you, buddy. Get some pressure on him. Be aggressive, Vic Fangio.
So we're now going to make our picks, Stoke. Our Broncos picks are presented by King Soopers, official grocer of the Denver Broncos. You want me to go first or you want to go first?
Go ahead, buddy.
So, okay, as we get closer to games, the homer in me, the analyst in me goes right out the window.
And
the homer in me comes right around. And the Saints have beaten the Broncos twice. The last time they did it, as we talked about earlier, I was in fourth grade. It was Christmas Eve. Jim Everett was their quarterback. The Broncos, I think, like, this is the best team in the NFC right now, the Saints. I think they've established that. You know, how great is it seeing Tom Brady blow it every primetime game? But I think the Broncos are going to bring the pressure to Taysom Hill this week. It's in Denver. I don't want to say they're overlooking the Broncos. I don't know how serious they're taking us. I think we can get after it. I think the Broncos are going to win this game. It's going to be low scoring. I think they take it 20-17.
Okay, look, I can definitely see that happening. Saints, they've had games where they've struggled early and they've been down double digits and they've seemed to just find ways to win those football games, certainly with Taysom Hill. Look, his debut was great. I mean, a home run, hit it out of the park. He was really, really good in that game against the Falcons. That doesn't mean it's going to translate against a much better defense than the Denver Broncos, right? And if the Broncos defense can get after him and make him uncomfortable and create a couple turnovers, they can be right in that game. I'm just giving the edge to the more complete football team in this one, John. And I look at the more complete football team, and that's the New Orleans Saints. They're better special teams, they're better offense, and they're better defense. So, can the Broncos win it? Yeah, they can win it, but they're going to have to do a lot of things right. Can't turn the football over if you're Drew Lock in the offense. Can't fumble the ball, Melvin Gordon. Got to make some big plays down the football field, and you got to take care of the football offensively. Can't give the Saints a short field, and I don't know if the Broncos can do that. They haven't been able to do that lately, and the Saints can generate pressure. They can generate turnovers. They had 8 sacks against Matt Ryan last week. That's right, 8 sacks against Matt Ryan.
Against the guy that gets rid of the ball.
Right, and it's got weapons all over the place. They held the Atlanta Falcons to 9 points, I believe it was. So I'm giving the edge to this one to the Saints. I can't ignore what I've seen on film. And the Saints are a better football team. And obviously with their record, even with Taysom Hill and the things that they can do, they present tough challenges for Vic Fangio and that defense because of what he can do with his legs. Alvin Kamara last week, yeah, they beat up on the Falcons there and they pulled away in the second half. He didn't catch one football out of the backfield.
That's amazing.
Which is flat out amazing. He only had one target. Emmanuel Sanders is coming to town and he wants to put on a show. I can guarantee you that. So, keep your eyes out on him. And I got the Saints winning this one, John, 27-17.
Okay, so we're both right around the same points for the Broncos. You just got the Saints scoring. Hey, you picked the Dolphins last week. So now I'm a little worried about my pick for the Broncos. Or you picked the Broncos last week, so you're the only one that got it right at this station. So now I'm a little worried going against
you. Well, I picked the Broncos earlier in the week, and then I've had second thoughts, and I changed my pick.
But it is winnable. You do find this very winnable.
Oh, yeah. I find this a winnable game for the Denver Broncos. They got to do things, the little things, the right way, though. But this isn't a game that I'm looking at and saying, oh, my gosh, there's no chance for the Denver Broncos to win this football game. No, not at all. If this defense can continue to play the way that they play, they have the secondary to be able to slow down the Saints. I don't know who Taysom Hill is as a starting quarterback. I've seen him play one good game. Okay, I'm not crowning that guy. So can the Broncos get after him and frustrate him like they did with Tua? Certainly they can. And we saw it last week what their pressure can do to a young quarterback. And do I think they can duplicate it again? Sure they can. Now they got to go out there and do it. Those Saints offensive line's much better. I mean, the Dolphins offensive line was just awful. I mean, they were just awful.
Dolphins offense generally is really just not good.
Yeah, but they had been playing pretty good up until that point under Tua, and they just fell apart. Just had an awful game. So, look, this is definitely a game that the Broncos could win. I would be surprised if they're able to win it because I haven't seen this offense do enough to score enough to be able to beat a team like the Saints.
Well, Stoke, last year we did Black Friday. This year, the day before Thanksgiving. I hope we can maybe make this a tradition every year we get together.
It's always a blast doing the show with you, John. You have a great Thanksgiving. All our great listeners out there, we appreciate you. I'm so thankful for you for rocking with us. Stephen Priest, appreciate you. My partner that took the day off, of course, I appreciate him a little bit, some days more than others. Give a shout-out to my Uncle Joey out there. His birthday's on Saturday. Best tri-tip in the country. Uncle Joey, happy birthday. Appreciate you, John Davis.
Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 1043thefan.com.